Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, it has been a volatile week in the markets. Wednesday, we saw the JSE poking its head above 58,000. Yesterday, a lot of the air coming back out of the markets, down almost 0.5%. And today, we end at around 0.4% up on the Aussie, 58,405 points. A similar percentage on the top 40, up 0.38%, 52,141 points there. The dollar rand pair looking quite good for the rand at the moment, 13.93 on the back of some dollar weakness, looking quite good against the pound as well, 18.26 to the pound and 15.76 to the euro. Gold, well, still below that key $1,300 an ounce mark at $1,292. To help us make sense of it all is Devon Shute, head of investments at the Robert Group. Devon, it feels like it's been an age. How are you doing?
Yeah, Michael, it has been a while. I think every day feels a lot longer with the amount of news flow we have to contend with in markets.
Yeah, I mean, the markets have been very, very choppy at the moment towards the end of a very long bull cycle. The question is, how much longer do we have to go? Clearly, the first quarter saw commodities continue their surge ahead, and we saw that theme continue into the first week of the second quarter. Over the last few days, though, we've seen commodities really pull back, and I'm looking at our major moves down. Northam down 2.7, Anglo Gold down 1.5. Is the commodity boom just taking a breather? Is there signs that we might see a bit of a rotation out of commodities right now? How are investors feeling?
Marco, it's possible. I mean, they had such a spectacular run that I wouldn't be surprised if a bit of money is taken off of the table. I mean, if you look more broadly at the financial markets, the first quarter of 2019 was an absolute blowout. And I think investors now are trying to evaluate, are the markets pausing, or are we actually have peaked and are in for more downside? So that's really the issue we're grappling with. I mean, the JSE up close to 11% for the year. US stocks hit a six-month high, and they're probably a percent away from all-time highs. So markets are looking strong, and there's a few underlying drivers for that.
A few underlying drivers. Name the keys for you at this moment.
Look, the weaker dollar is definitely helping, and that's got to do with a very dovish Fed at this stage. In addition, we were all quite surprised with the, as you mentioned in your intro, the strong trade and lending figures coming out of China. I think a lot of people had really written off China as a much slower growth story, and I think some of those stimulus measures that have been in place are now starting to gain traction. And although we saw weakness in commodity stocks, I think the longer term commodity picture still looks fairly robust.
And that is very good news for us. It's good news for other commodity producing nations, but at a time that we are looking for anything that we can get, because let's face it, the manufacturing data out yesterday was poor, the business confidence index data that we've seen lately is poor, all of the high frequency macro data isn't good for South Africa, and we are hoping to see that shift post the election. We think we're in a period where market participants are just sitting on their hands and taking a wait and see approach. If commodity prices stay where they are for the likes of PGMs, and we've really seen very, very good numbers out of platinum, rhodium and palladium, we've seen really good prices for gold lately, iron ore as well, and oil. If we can then get the confidence issue sorted out, then we have the foundations for a nice little uptick in South Africa.
I think that's right. I think, what you're seeing is investors weighing up how much negativity is priced into these stocks and how little potential good news needs to filter in for there to be a re-rating higher. And I think, markets by nature are forward pricing mechanisms. And I think looking through, there are some very beat up stocks that are showing potential value. So I think you're seeing that, although, as you said, the data points have been particularly poor. I think you're starting to see people discount those and looking through the slump in the cycle.
Well, one that is very difficult to call at this stage is EOH. Talk about a stock that's been beat up. It was at 170 Rand at one stage. It ended the day at, 11 Rand 40, I think, up 1.6 after falling almost 10% on the back of a trading announcement a couple of days ahead of its results. We'll be chatting to Stephen Van Coller on Tuesday. EOH, can SVC do a Lazarus, is my question to you. Has he kitchen sinked everything, and do you think the markets are buying it?
Yeah, I mean, today was the dictionary definition of kitchen sinking, throwing out all the bad news all at the same time. This came on the back of what they told us they were going to do, that strategic review of their assets. So, yeah, I mean, it was the market action this morning. It opened down, I think it was over 15% at one stage, so back to 2009 levels. It did manage to claw all of that back and close positive. But, yeah, there's some very real challenges that the business has to face. So what they're doing is they're writing down values of intangibles, non-core businesses, minority investments, that type of thing. So the profits were severely impacted as a result of that. If you look through it at revenue and costs, those were fairly unchanged. So, yeah, we've really got to see if Stephen has what it takes to right the ship. I think that, you know, consolidation is needed with what became quite a cumbersome conglomeration of businesses, and I think you'll see the rationalizations there. What will be concerning is if this company just continues to move lower with the share price, putting shareholders in an even tougher position. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of an investment decision, what do you do from here? Incredibly difficult, but my sense is the worst is probably now out and potentially behind shareholders.
The issue has always been, I think, the market saw Stephen Van Coller as something of a restructuring specialist. He's got a strong banking background, obviously, with Absa. He was always very closely aligned to the tech side, the fintech side of the banking narrative. Whenever I chatted to him from the World Economic Forum, he would like to focus on how banks are becoming telcos, are becoming disrupted by, you know, the new world of technology. Is he an IT CEO, though? Has he grown up in the kind of die data school of business analytics and actuarial mathematics and all the rest of it? I don't know. I look at EOH and I still see a company that is going to struggle to return to its former glory. A lot of its business seemingly based on what have now turned out to be very dodgy government contracts.
Yeah, but you know, if you've got a structuring specialist, which we think he is, I think that's probably the right cap to wear at the head of this ship at the moment. I think you could argue that EOH in its heady days probably got way too far ahead of itself. Shareholders gave too much of benefit of the doubt to the growth story that was being spun. And I think the chickens have more than come home to roost. I think the normalization has happened, and it's now about getting a much leaner and meaner operation, and that might look very different from what we've been used to the last kind of 10 years.
It'll be interesting to see what comes out in the detail at the results on Tuesday. I look forward to chatting to Stephen Van Coller on Tuesday. A very difficult job that he's got. I wouldn't want it for all the money that is left on its balance sheet, which is not too much if you look at things. Asher Bobot, I recall, the last few times that I spoke to him, was certainly an individual who spoke very passionately about South Africa. He gave a lot to CSI programs. He was always one to bang on the drum for youth employment and for corporate South Africa to really stand up. And, you know, at the AGM towards the beginning of this year, he really bemoaned the fact that all 11,000 odd employees at EOH were being tarred with the same brush because of a few bad apples. So I do wish SVC all the best in turning the ship around. It's never nice to see an organization organization the size of UOH collapse that the way it has. Let's look at some macro data that came out yesterday. US weekly jobless claims hitting a 50-year low, and they've dropped now below 200,000, very close to the number that we saw in terms of the jobs number last Friday at 196,000. That's the lowest level since early October 1969. Now, my question to you, Devin, is in this environment where we see almost full employment in the US, it's really firing on all cylinders. Inflation hasn't quite crept up the way we would have expected it to, but surely, as the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell has got to be looking at his interest rate path now and saying, I've got to start hiking sooner rather than later. I'm not going to have any arrows left in my quiver if there is a downturn.
Look, I agree that this labor market is looking very full, and I think there are some inflationary pressures going to come through from wages. I mean, there are just not enough workers to go around for the vacancies in the US, which is just an incredible situation. So although growth is slowing somewhat, the economy is still looking very resilient. And as a result, I think wage growth is a very key data point to be watching there. That could be offset by other deflationary pressures that tech and things bring in. So I don't think it's a slam dunk. Inflation is rising, and we're gonna get immediate rate hikes. But I think for the first time we're starting to see those inflationary pressures push through from the labor market, and it's probably going to be the key focus area for the Fed.
And I also think we're toppish because you're seeing companies being brought to the market, and it's amazing what plops out of the end of a bull at the very long end of a long bull run. Uber unveiling its IPO, warning it may never make a profit. Incredible that. Is this a warning sign? The rush to list. We've seen Lyft and how that plunged after its IPO. Now Uber and Pinterest. All of these things tend to come at the back end of a cycle.
Yeah, it does worry me quite a bit that we're having these huge tech listings coming. I mean, this Uber IPO is touted to be the largest since we had Alibaba. That was already 5 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it is worrying, isn't it, that you've got a company that just sees escalating costs and slowing growth and demanding massive valuations on the listing. So already you've seen the potential valuation that some of the investment bankers were expecting moved down from about $120 billion to $90 to $100 billion. And I think that's partly on the back of the Lyft pop and fizz that happened. And, you know, the investors are now underwater there in the IPO. So yeah, I'm quite circumspect about this. I'm quite concerned with how these businesses are effectively going to treat investors if they get too exuberant in the listing.
And that is the big issue. Sorry, Devin. We had Mshalozi trying to butt in at the end of that market commentary. Thank you very much. Devin Shute, Head of Investments at the Robert Group, with your view from the markets.